Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we're featuring another of Radio Man Dave Amaral's adaptations of the Dr. Sam Hawthorne stories of Edward D. Hoke. For several decades, Ed Hoke contributed a classical whodunit to our magazine each month. Many of those stories featured the country doctor you'll meet here and also in next month's podcast.
Suddenly, a face appeared from behind the counter. It was a masked man with a mustache and beard, wearing a cowboy hat and a fringe leather jacket. I felt the bullet tug at my sleeve as it went by. I heard Eustace Carey gasp and go down hard. I turned and saw him on the floor, bleeding from a wound in his side near the waist. The masked man raised his gun for another shot, but seemed to think better of it. He turned and ran down the long hall to the back door, just as he had done the previous morning.
Yes, it's time once again for Sam Hawthorne, retired New England doctor, to turn a page in his book of memories and recall another miracle problem. Tonight, the problem of the country inn.
Well, hello there. You're just in time for a small libation and another story. Yes, yes. Now, I promised to tell you the story of the old country inn this time, didn't I? Well, it was in the summer of 1926, it was, just after the affair with the eel I told you about last time. And you remember the feud between Jeff Whitehead and Eustace Carey? They'd fought a sort of a duel out at Whitehead's farm, and Eustace had ended up with a bullet in his thigh. After Eustace was released from the hospital, I checked in on him about once a week, as there was still the possibility of secondary infection. I had just returned from seeing Eustace one day when there was a call from Sheriff Lenz.
Sam, I'm out here at the ferry house. There's been a shooting. Can you come out right away?
The ferry house? I'm on my way, Sheriff. The ferry house was an old country inn out on Post Road, where the bridge is now. The ferry never ran at night, of course, and travelers used to stop at the inn for food and lodgings before continuing their journey in the morning. The ferry house was owned by William Stokes, a retired lawyer who'd moved to Northmont with his wife about 5 years earlier. She died of influenza during my first winter here in town. Stokes was a vigorous man in his mid-60s, and he'd buried his wife out behind the inn and kept right on operating it. But on this particular day, a sunny day in June it was, William Stokes wasn't looking vigorous anymore. I reached the inn and parked my runabout behind the sheriff's car. The first thing I saw when I entered was the sheriff standing near the body of Stokes, sprawled on the rug by the front desk. I glanced into the dining room off to my right, and I saw little Benny Fields, the inn's room clerk, hunched over a shot of bootleg whiskey.
I'm glad I finally got a hold of you, Doc.
Yeah, hello, Sheriff. When did this happen?
Oh, about an hour ago. I've been trying to reach you.
You don't need me, Sheriff. This man's dead.
Well, that's for sure.
What happened?
Benny Fields says he was getting the weekend receipts ready for the bank when a hold-up man came in through the front door. Benny says he was wearing a fringe leather jacket and he was carrying an old Western revolver and that he had on a black mask, just like a highwayman.
Benny hitting the bottle?
Benny's always got his hands on some bootleg whiskey.
And where was Stokes?
Seems Stokes was upstairs, and he came down right in the middle of this. The bandit took one look and shot him clean through the chest. And the bandit heard some people coming up the front walk, so he hightailed it down that hall to the back door.
I see that the stack of money is still on the counter. You mean he got away without the money?
He didn't get the money, and he didn't get away.
You caught him.
Benny says the killer ran down the long hall, and you can see for yourself it leads only to the back door. Trouble is, the door's bolted on the inside. Nobody could have gone out and left it like that.
What do you mean?
I mean, Benny's lying. And I'm arresting him for the murder of William Stokes.
The body was removed, and Sheriff Lenz went outside to supervise its loading into the town ambulance. I went into the dining room and stopped at the center table where Benny Fields sat. Vera Wiggins, the widow of Northmont's former mayor, was seated by the window.
Good afternoon, Dr. Sam. This is a terrible thing.
Hello, Vera.
How are you feeling, Benny?
Not so good, Dr. Sam. It's not every day I get accused of murder.
Tell me what happened, will you? From the time you came on duty this morning.
It was like I told the sheriff, this masked man...
Benny, from the beginning.
Well, first thing I do when I come in on Monday like this is open the safe and total up the food money from the weekend. Sometimes it's a very tidy sum.
How tidy?
It was over $500 last weekend.
How many guests stay in right now?
Just one, Mr. Smith.
So the only people in the inn at the time of the robbery were you and Stokes, plus Vera Wiggins and this Mr. Smith upstairs.
That's right. The kitchen help don't come in till late afternoon on Mondays. Mrs. Wiggins tends to us if we need anything before that.
Go on with your story.
Well, I was just starting to count the money when the front door bursts open and in walks this masked man. He had a Western hat, a fringed leather jacket, and a revolver.
What did he look like?
Maybe a little taller than me. He had a bushy mustache that showed just under the mask. That's about all I can tell you about him.
Fat? Thin?
Just sort of medium.
Go on.
He pointed a revolver at me and he motioned towards the money. I got his message right away.
He didn't speak.
No.
Odd. Sheriff Lynn says that Stokes came downstairs in the middle of all this. What attracted him?
I suppose he heard me talking, asking this masked man what he wanted. Anyways, as soon as he saw Stokes, he turned and fired. One shot straight at his chest. I attacked behind my counter, and then I heard voices from outside. A couple of delivery men were coming in with the meat.
Did they see the killer?
No, I wouldn't be in this jam if they had. He turned and ran down the back hall.
Now, did you actually see or hear him go out?
Well, no, but he must have. I shouted to the meat man that there'd been a shooting, and I started down the hall. But I could see he was gone, so we all ran outside.
Then what did you do?
Nothing. There was no trace of him. We figured he made off into the woods along the river.
Did you see any footprints?
No. It's all gravel out there, and there hasn't been any rain lately.
Then you called the sheriff?
Yeah. He was here within 10 minutes, and he poked around real good. He found the back door was bolted from the inside.
So he thinks you killed Stokes.
Yeah. He says, where could this masked man have gotten to? And he's right. There is no place.
Is the back door usually bolted?
Just at night. Stokes unlocks it the first thing in the morning. But he must not have gotten to it.
Let's go down the hall and take a look.
The hallway walls were papered with a pattern of faded flowers. I could see that the door bolt was still in place, and it didn't slide easily. The screws holding the bolt and the bolt receiver to the frame were tightly in place. I examined the door panels. There was no trick exit. The door jamb itself was weather-stripped, and the door opened and closed quietly. The floor was covered with a long single piece of brown linoleum, and there was no trap door. I tapped on the walls with my knuckles. Near the far end, I heard hollow sounds in both walls.
That's an old door that led to the kitchen. The one on the left led to a storeroom.
They were boarded up and papered over. We used the entrances around the sides.
What's above us?
Well, the upstairs hall with Mrs. Wiggins' room at the end of it.
I'll have a look.
I returned to the dining room and found Vera Wiggins seated in a straight-back chair next to the window. She was a tall and beautiful woman, her strong features accented by the makeup she wore. Her thoughts seemed far away. I was only a few paces from her when she looked up with a start.
Oh, it's you, Dr. Sam.
It's been a long time, Vera. I haven't seen you since,
Yes, I know.
I heard you were working here at the inn.
A person has to make do.
I wonder if you could show me around upstairs.
If you like, right this way.
Tell me more about this Mr. Smith.
He hasn't stirred out of his room. He's got the do not disturb sign out. He probably slept through all the excitement.
That seems a bit odd.
What would you like to see?
Just a general look around. Which is your room?
Right here.
Would it be possible to look inside?
If you must. Satisfied?
This would be directly over the downstairs hall?
I suppose so. I never thought about it.
You know the killer vanished down there.
You think he came up through the ceiling?
I've seen things almost as strange. I think it's time Mr. Smith was awakened.
You'll wake the poor man.
Has it occurred to you, Vera, that the late sleeping Mr. Smith may be the mass killer who vanished so mysteriously?
But how could that be? He was up here.
Go away. I'm trying to sleep.
Mr. Smith, I must talk to you. There's been a murder downstairs.
Go away.
Jeff Whitehead.
Hello, Dr. Sam.
Well, Jeff, I'm surprised to see you here.
I'm glad it's you, Doc. Ever since I heard Carrie was out of the hospital, I've been afraid he'd come out gunning for me.
You mean because of that foolish duel?
Yeah. There's been bad blood between us for a long time, and he was out yelling the duel was unfair because he didn't get a chance to fire, and he swore he'd come looking for me.
So you've been hiding here?
Yeah, I figured I'd just stay for a few days till Carrie got tired of looking for me.
Does anyone know you're here?
No, I told my son I'd be away for a few days. That's all.
Let me sit down, Jeff. I'll try not to mess your freshly made-up bed. You know, Jeff, you and Carrie are both grown men with grown children. It's about time you start acting like it. This hall business of the duel was foolish. And your hiding out here is just adding to the foolishness. Go back home, Jeff. You've already gotten in trouble just being here.
What do you mean, Dr. Sam?
Didn't you hear the shot?
What shot?
The owner, William Stokes, was shot dead by a masked bandit.
Oh, no. I thought there was a lot of activity here today.
How well did you know Stokes?
Hardly at all. That's one reason I came here.
Then you know nothing about the killing?
No, I haven't been out of my room all day.
All right, Jeff. Sheriff Lenz is downstairs. I know he'll want to question you, but I won't tell anyone else you're here.
Thanks, Doc.
Jeff Whitehead. Well, I'll be. Say, Doc, you think he's involved somehow?
I don't see how. What about the men who were delivering meat?
Oh, I questioned them and let them go on their way. They had other deliveries to make, and their ice was melting fast.
I'd like to talk to them.
I say Benny Fields killed Stokes. Or do you think this is another one of your impossible crimes?
Oh, I don't know. But why don't you hold off arresting Fields till tomorrow? He's not going anywhere, and by that time, we'll have a better idea of what happened.
Well, all right, Doc. I'll admit that was a pretty crazy story for Fields to make up, if it's not true. But I can't explain that door being locked on the inside any other way.
Neither can I, Sheriff. Neither can I.
I drove back to town, following the most likely route of the delivery wagon. I spoke briefly to the two men. They confirmed that they had not seen the masked bandit, but had no doubt that Benny Fields was telling the truth. That evening, I paid another call on Eustace Carey. He was in the back room of his general store, doing some heavy work, which I had been advising him against.
Oh, hello, Doc. Checking up on me?
You shouldn't be putting too much weight on that leg, Eustace. Not quite yet.
I know, but there's work to be done.
And what about Jeff Whitehead?
What about him?
I'd hate to see you out gunning for him.
I'm not gunning for him.
He thinks you are. He's in hiding. Look, would you go out with me to see him, shake hands?
Well...
Bury the hatchet once and for all?
Okay, Doc. Why not?
Fine. I'll take you to him first thing in the morning.
Early the next morning, I picked up Eustace in my runabout, noticing with some satisfaction that his limp seemed better today.
I'm not so sure this is a good idea, Doc.
Northmont is a small town, Eustace, and I... Say, what's this doing in your pocket?
You give that back.
Darn it, Eustace, you can't go seeing Jeff Whitehead with a gun in your pocket. What kind of peacemaking would that be?
It was only to defend myself in case he tried something.
Well, he's not going to, so I'll just keep the revolver.
When we arrived at the ferry house, I locked his gun in the side luggage compartment, which proved to be a mistake. I led the way up the walk and opened the front door of the inn. At first glance, I saw no one behind the clerk's desk. Suddenly, I saw a face appear from behind the counter. It was a masked man with a mustache and a beard, wearing a cowboy hat and a fringed leather jacket. He'd been trying to open the safe. I saw the gun in his hand and...
Get down, Eustace!
I felt the bullet tug at my sleeve as it went by. I heard Eustace gasp and go down hard. I turned and saw him on the floor, bleeding from a wound in his side near the waist. The masked man raised his gun for another shot, but thought better of it. He turned and ran down the long hall to the back door, just as he had done the previous morning. I wanted to go after him, but I had a wounded man on my hands. I knelt by Carey's side, wadding my handkerchief up to stem the flow of blood. His eyes were open, and he seemed to be going into shock.
What is it, Dr. Sam? What happened?
Didn't you hear the shot?
Something woke me up. I must have been dozing.
Well, call the ambulance, quick. He needs a hospital.
Oh, okay, Doc. What happened?
Is he badly hurt?
Where have you two been?
I was in the kitchen having coffee. Mrs. Wiggins came in and asked if I'd heard the shot.
Oh, Dr. Sam, Jeff didn't do this, did he?
It was the masked bandit again. And he disappeared in the hallway, the same as yesterday.
It sounds like a ghost.
Carey's wound wasn't as deep as I had first feared. The heavy jacket he'd brought to conceal his gun probably saved his life. The ambulance came and took Eustace to the hospital in Felix. Then, Benny Fields and I went down the hall to examine it. The heavy bolt was still in place, locking the door from the inside. Fields put his left hand on the bracket and pulled the bolt open with his right. He swung the door open and we looked outside. The gravel area was empty and the woods in the distance were gently peaceful. We retraced our steps down the hallway. The wallpaper was still faded, but all of it was still firmly in place, even where the doors had been boarded up and papered over. There was no sign of a crack or a hinge. This time, I got a broomstick and poked at the ceiling, but there was no opening. The masked bandit had vanished again, and this time, I'd seen it with my own eyes.
You actually saw this masked bandit, Doc?
Not at first. He was down behind the counter by the safe. He fired one shot that just missed me and hit Eustace. Then he took off down the hall.
And he looked like Benny had said.
Exactly. Right down to his boots.
why'd he be dumb enough to come back a second time?
Could be because he got scared off the first time without the money.
He didn't get the money today either. You think he'll be back again tomorrow?
No.
Say, you think it's a ghost?
No more so than that bandstand ghost that killed Mayor Wiggins summer before last.
You mean more trickery? So where does that leave us, Doc?
The answer lies out at the ferry house. Suppose I meet you there at 8 o'clock, and maybe we'll catch our masked phantom.
Sheriff Lenz had gathered Vera Wiggins, Benny Fields, and Jeff Whitehead together in the dining room of the inn when I arrived later that evening.
You're a little late, Doc. You said 8 o'clock.
Well, I drove over to the hospital in Phoenix to see Eustace Carey. They've removed the bullet and he's out of danger.
Well, that's good news. Too bad Stokes wasn't quite so lucky.
It was Eustace who was unlucky, Sheriff. And his being shot threw me off the track. I even thought for a while that he was the intended victim all along. And that I'd been tricked into bringing him out here.
What are you getting at, Doc?
There was something about you being here that didn't ring true to start with. And staying in your room with all that commotion downstairs. Now, why? Not because you were afraid of Eustace Carey.
I didn't shoot anybody.
I know, Jeff. You're not the masked bandit. But the thought crossed my mind. Until Vera Wiggins called you by name. And I remembered the bed.
What bed?
When I found Jeff in his room yesterday morning, the bed had already been made up. Now, he hadn't been out of the room, and he had the Do Not Disturb sign out. Nobody makes up their own bed at an inn. Not when there's a housekeeper on duty. I think Vera Wiggins made up the bed because she shared it with him. And that's the reason he was here in the first place.
Well, I'll be doggone.
I'd say Jeff Whitehead was guilty, but not of murder.
Then who's the mass killer? You've eliminated every man that was... Say, the killer never spoke. It could have been a woman.
Dr. Sam?
Vera Wiggins? No, I happen to know she's innocent.
Well, then who and how?
I hate to admit it, Sheriff, but you were right all along. There never was a masked bandit. Benny Fields made up the whole story. After he murdered his employer.
Stop! Stop or I'll shoot, Benny!
He was almost to the bolted door when the sheriff fired. This time, Benny Fields didn't disappear.
You might have killed him, Sheriff.
Nah, I only aimed for his legs. I should have arrested him yesterday morning. He had guilt written all over him.
Yeah, I guess he did. I suppose Stokes caught him with his hand in the cash, or they had a violent argument. Anyway, Benny pulled out a revolver and shot him.
But what about the shooting this morning? You saw the masked bandit.
Benny was still afraid of being arrested. He thought his only chance was to stage an appearance of the masked bandit. When he first thought up the story, he described the killer dressed in clothes he already owned. Now, Benny is fairly short. He said the bandit was a little taller. Cowboy boots would add a couple of inches.
But why did he shoot at you and Eustace?
I'm sure he didn't try to kill Eustace. In fact, it was better not to, because that gave him another witness to the masked bandit. We were just unlucky enough to arrive at the wrong moment.
Okay. But how'd he vanish down that hallway?
I think I know now. Let's go take a look. I think we'll find that he gimmicked this bolt in a very simple way. You remember I examined the lock yesterday and all the screws were tight? But look now. You can see the ends of toothpicks around these two screws holding the bolt receiver to the door frame.
I see.
Sometime last night, Benny removed these screws and enlarged their holes. To disappear, he simply pulled the door closed behind him. The loose screws went back into their holes, and the door looked as if it was still bolted. Later, he put the toothpick ends into the holes to tighten the screws.
How'd you tumble to this, Doc?
Well, when I realized that Benny was our masked bandit, I remembered that when he and I came down here to examine this door, he held his hand on the receiver bracket when he pulled the bolt open.
Suppose the screws would have fallen out instead of going back into their holes. Or you might have seen him go through the door.
Well, sure, anything could have happened, Sheriff. But he'd just have said the screws were loose all along. And that's how the bandit escaped yesterday, too.
Then we'd have known that he was lying.
Yes, but we couldn't have proved it. When the trick did work, he just went along with its seeming impossibility.
Well, I'll be. It was just a simple killing, but he sure made it complicated.
Well, we found Benny's disguise hidden behind the big old kitchen stove. And a check of the books showed that he had been stealing money from the inn. Another small libation? Say, did I ever tell you about Sheriff Lenz running for re-election that same year? And about the murder in the voting booth? Now that was an impossible crime. I remember it rained on election day that year and... I see you must be leaving now, eh? Well, guess I'll have to save that story for next time.
Dr. Sam Hawthorne, produced by Dave Amaral, and based on the characters created by Edward D. Hoke, appearing in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Heard in tonight's cast were Jim Harmon as Sheriff Lenz, with Lloyd Nesbitt, Sarah Hamner, Jay Judson, and Richard Scott as Dr. Sam Hawthorne. This is Robert Lasich, inviting you to join us next time for The Problem of the Voting Booth.
The Problem of the Country Inn, which first appeared in the September 1977 issue of EQMM, is copyrighted by the estate of Edward D. Hoke. Alterations to this dramatic representation of the work to make it suitable for podcasting were done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.